Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
With a small group of people pressuring the government moved the Modocs back onto the reservation.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's October 8th, 2021 program, The Aftermath of Great Loss, The Modoc People Persevere. And I'm Karin Knudsen, President-elect of City Club. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, and we invite you to join us as a new or renewing member of City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. The mission of the City Club of Eugene is to build community vision through open inquiry. If you're not yet a member, we encourage you to join us this week. And again, more information is available online at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. All City Club programs are available on our YouTube channel, Facebook page at City Club of Eugene, and as podcasts on Podbean. And all programs are broadcast on our local public radio station, KLCC 89.7, on Monday nights at 7 p.m. In today's program, The Aftermath of Great Loss, The Modoc People Persevere, we welcome Dr. Donald Dexter, DMD, and cinematographer Christelle Ozis. More biographical information about our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. The Modoc War, a conflict between the U.S. government and the Modoc people, took place during 1872 and 1873 in Northern California near the Oregon border. The war was hard fought, and the Modocs achieved initial victories despite being vastly outnumbered and outgunned. But in the end, the U.S. Army won. The surviving Modocs were removed from their ancestral homelands. Some were sent to the Klamath Indian Reservation in Oregon, and others to a reservation in Oklahoma. Four Modoc warriors were hanged, including their leader, Kintpuash, also known as Captain Jack. Donald Dexter, a Eugene dentist of Modoc descent, and local cinematographer Christelle Ozis are producing a documentary about the Modoc War and Modoc people. The working title is Modoc, Endeavor to Persevere. And Dr. Dexter also plans to create a memorial symbolizing the history and persistence of the Modoc people. Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Hello, welcome to the City Club of Eugene. This is Andrew Kallick. From the Umatilla to the Umpqua, Coquille to the Klamath, the history of the territory that we now call Oregon is replete with stories from many tribes. One that might not have been in your textbook growing up is the story of the Modoc people, both in Oregon and in California. And we are so lucky to be able to learn more about that proud history today from two people who are working on telling that story. I turn it over to Don Dexter. Don.
Thank you. I would like to start the presentation by just making a statement that our project does not represent the Klamath tribes of Oregon or the Modoc Nation of Oklahoma, and certainly doesn't speak for all Modoc people. It's simply our opportunity to share our voice and allow others to tell their stories as well. My name is Don Dexter. I'm Modoc, seventh generation descendant of Old Chief Skonjan, who was a signatory of the Klamath Treaty, 1864, and also Toby Riddle, who was an interpreter during the war and has been more popular or commonly referred to as Wainema. And in 1914, Wainema's son, Jeff Riddle, he wrote the first comprehensive book on the Modoc War, and it was called The Indian History of the Modoc War, as told from the Indian perspective. And so for me, that is the story and the family history that I grew up with. I was raised on the former Klamath Indian Reservation, which during the time of termination, government policy terminated federal recognition of many tribes and Mine was one of them. So I grew up in the termination era. I received my bachelor's in psychology from Lewis and Clark and my dental degree from Oregon Health Sciences in Portland at OHSU. This is a very complicated story, and I'm going to try not to get mired down into a lot of the details that's going to, I think, I'll save some room to really talk about the project itself. First off, MODOC, we've referred to ourselves as Motokni. It's become MODOC, but we were Motokni Mukluks, which were the MODOC people. Our history with the land we came from goes back 12,000 years, and we referred to ourselves as people of the burnt out fires, and that was in reference to Medicine Lake in Northern California. Interesting thing about Medicine Lake is it is the largest by volume volcano in the Cascades. And that was the land that we came from. The MODOC people had a 5,000 square mile range going from the eastern flank of Mount Shasta to the west, to the north, the southern edge of Klamath Lake, to the east, Clear Lake, and to the south was Medicine Lake. And that was our range of existence up until 1864. And in 1864, the MODOC people were removed from that land and relocated to the Klamath Reservation in southern Oregon. The interesting chain of events that led to that pressure to move the MODOCs off the land, didn't start. People were coming through, settlers, trappers were coming through, but in 1846, the Applegate Trail was established, and that was the southern route to Oregon to the Willamette Valley. And the Applegate Trail came directly through the heart of MODOC land. And it was pretty appealing land, so a lot of the people jumped off the trail and decided to settle there. So that increased traffic into the area. And then that was followed by the California Gold Rush in 1848. And the Applegate Trail was used to get to the Siskiyou area, Yreka. So those two things greatly increased traffic through the heart of the MODOC territory. And then in 1850, California became a state. And then 1851, they announced their Indian policy. And the Indian policy was extermination. Today, we would call that genocide, but at that time, they called it extermination. And so with that policy and with those events, the fate of the MODOC people was basically sealed. And the bookend of the California termination or extermination policy was 1873. So leading up to the war, the MODOCs were signatories on the Treaty of 1864, and they were moved to southern Oregon. That treaty ceded 20 million acres to the government, and in return, there was a 2 million acre reservation established. And the reservation was on the Klamath land. It was in the heart of the Klamath land. There were three groups of people, the Klamath, the MODOC, and then a small band of Northern Paiute was put on there. And most of the MODOC people, they settled onto the reservation. They were separated into two groups. The one group was under the leadership of the old chief. They were placed on the eastern edge of the reservation and settled in pretty much undisturbed and did well. Another group, which was under the leadership of Kinpuash, who was referred to as Captain Jack, they were placed on the Klamath Reservation directly in the middle of the Klamath people. And it wasn't a really good relationship because the Klamath and the MODOC were similar, same people going back and long, long time ago, but about 200-300 years prior to that, they had separated into two groups. And one became the northern people, which were the Klamath Lake, and then the other were the Modoc. And so even though they were common people, they weren't the closest of cousins, and they weren't the worst of enemies. But when they were moved onto the reservation, it was confrontational. So Captain Jack Kinpuash, he decided to take his group of people and leave the reservation and return to their ancestral lands in Northern California. They complained of harassment by the Klamath people and the neglect of fulfilling treaty obligations by the government. So rather than live in government poverty and then at odds with the Klamath, they chose to return to their ancestral lands. In 1872, there was an effort to return the Modocs to their back to the reservation. By that time, there was a lot more settlement in the area. There were a lot more people coming in, and people, although the Modoc basically were getting along well with people, the settlers, the pressure was they didn't want them there on that land. So with a small group of people pressuring the government moved the Modocs back onto the reservation in November of 1872. That was the precipitating action that led to the Modoc War. The military was directed to return them to the reservation, clearly stated peacefully if possible, but by any means as needed. So the Modoc War resulted from that, and it went from January 1873 to June 1873. The Modocs were under the leadership of Captain Jack, and during that confrontation, they never had more than 60 fighting age men involved on the Modoc side. There were about 160 people that had left the reservation, but less than 60 of them were actually fighting age. And they were against a force of estimated up to 1,000 people at some point. They were against the military forces, the local militias, and a significant number of Indian scouts were brought in to help track them and fight them. So the war went from January to June. And what was interesting about the conflict, it was very unique because there were long periods of negotiation with intermittent conflict. And that allowed the war to be covered. There was a very large press coverage of the Modoc War. It just fascinated the world, because it even had international coverage. It was covered in New York and Chicago, and people were fascinated with the story of the Modoc War because there was a lot of press and opportunity to cover it. It had a broad interest, and as it turns out, it was the most expensive Indian war in U.S. history. Also, the only Indian conflict that a regular commissioned general was killed. During peace negotiations, General Canby, who was leading the military, he was killed, as well as another peace negotiator, Reverend Thomas. So what began as peace negotiations following that those killings became a campaign of extermination of the Modoc people. It was ultimately for these killings that four men were charged with war crimes. So what were the consequences of the Modoc War? Approximately 160 people who had left the reservation were returned to the reservation. Four of the men, Captain Jack, Sconchis, Black Jim, and Boston Charlie, they were charged, tried, and convicted of the war crimes. And then on October 3rd, 1873, they were hung, executed for their involvement in the war. On October 12th, 9 days later, the remaining 156 members of their group were loaded onto wagons and taken to Redding, California. And from there, they were placed in cattle cars and shipped to Baxter Springs, Oklahoma. I can't imagine what they must have gone through to be placed onto the wagons and taken to Redding and have never even seen a railroad car, a train, and then to be placed on those cars. They were placed into four cars and shipped to Oklahoma. The men, any male in that group who was of fighting age, they were shackled and transported shackled. And the Modoc people, they arrived in Oklahoma towards the end of November. It was a long trip. And eventually they were placed on the Quapaw Indian Reservation, a northeast corner of the state. And at that point, it was the ending of all remnants of the Modoc War. That's the history that that brings us up to our project. Our project involves addressing, let me back up a little bit. When the men were executed, they were executed at Fort Klamath, the military fort in Fort Klamath, Oregon. They were hung, their heads were cut off and sent to a military museum in Maryland, and the bodies were buried. So in the 148 years since that event, those bodies have been buried, and they're basically where they were executed, where they are. So the graves are located at the site of their execution. They're situated inside a small metal fence, and they're marked by four plain wooden markers, each simply stating their name and execution, date of the execution, which was October 3rd, 1873. There are no other markers, plaques, or signage to acknowledge these people or the event, anything regarding that execution. When I'm asked what's wrong with the graves currently, my response is that in that regard, they're existing like abandoned graves. Property is owned by Klamath County Museum. It's owned and managed by the Klamath County Museum. It's 8 acres. And it's interesting when you walk around that property that there are many other objects on that property that do have signage and plaques commemorating their significance. But the Modoc graves, there is nothing there other than the small fence with the markers. I feel like that is really an omission of history and a disrespect of not just the story, but these men specifically. So the question goes from what's wrong with those graves to what do we want to do to change that? My concern was, what do we do to respect those graves? What do we do to honor that? My initial reaction was, we need to take these men home. But then, thinking that there was no home to take them to because that land was all occupied, I thought that the least we could do would be to place a memorial on that site. And so to pay respect to those graves and that event, I offered to donate a memorial to be placed on the site of the Modoc graves. Offer was to gift a memorial to the Modoc Nation of Oklahoma and to the Klamath tribes of Oregon. And by making that offer and by their acceptance of that gift, the gift would pass through them as a gift to all Modoc descendants. Plan for the memorial was to go back to the Medicine Lake area, our ancestral lands, to respectfully harvest a rock from that area and to place that rock on the site of where those graves are, to place the rock directly on the ground. There's nothing between that rock from our lands and that ground where they are. So harvest a rock from Medicine Lake, set it directly on the ground, and put it on the south edge of the graves because it brings the land closer to the people. Have two bronze plaques on there, one facing to the rising sun of the east, which commemorates the men and the event, and the other plaque facing west to the setting sun to remind us at the end of every day that we're still there, Modoc people, that we're still there. That was my inspiration, and that was my plan of what I wanted to do. And it goes back to my intro where I said, this project does not represent the Klamath or the Modoc tribes, although they're involved. It represents people and we wanted to do something that we could just get accomplished and get it done. And when I say placing a rock, I say a significant rock. People, it's funny because the question is, well, what is a significant size rock? I mean, is it something two people carry? Is it something you put in your pocket? What's significant? And, you know, I've gone out and sized rocks for reference, and we're looking probably about a 1,600-pound rock. That is significant. So our project was, you know, what is wrong with the graves? I felt they were abandoned. What we were going to do with it? We want to place a memorial there. And then the third question is, how does this war affect Modoc people currently? And that really is the crux of our project. How does the war affect Modoc people currently? The project, the intention is to not just document the process of placing a memorial, but to have oral histories and stories to allow people to talk and tell their stories. So we can address that question of how does it affect Modoc people currently. We very importantly don't want this to be a story of victims, because these are the stories of survival, and everybody, every Modoc person that is here today is a survivor of events that they've had to overcome incredible odds. So it's a success and a celebration. The story is intended to be very positive. It's intended to give a voice and courage to those who want to stand up. And we honestly feel that these are stories that should be told and seen. You know, I sincerely believe that these are stories that exemplify that we are Modoc, we are Motokni. And as our title said, we endeavor to persevere. And I feel very fortunate in this process that I've met a person who is young, sincere, enthusiastic, and it's just going to be a great compliment to have Christelle involved with this project and helping me on it. And I'll turn it over.
Thanks, Don. So my name's Christelle, and I am a freelance videographer and filmmaker. I graduated from the University of Oregon with a degree in journalism and environmental studies, and I graduated in June of this year, so fairly recently. When Dawn first told me about the story about the Modoc War, I was so captivated by it, and I really wanted to help out with the process. He first told me about it back in December of 2020, and I was in school at the time, so it was just a perfect timing because I was in a few documentary classes, so I was able to utilize the resources from my school. So like rent cameras and talk with professors about how I'm able to help tell the story. So I educated myself on the story, and I started reading a lot of books about the Modoc War and talking with Dawn and learning more about the story itself. And then I was able to rent some cameras from school and get footage of both Dawn talking about the story and his personal experience. And then we were able to go together and get some footage of Modoc land. So the lava beds and Tule Lake and the graves itself. My goal with this project is to work with Dawn and help bring representation to the Modoc people and get this story talked about and bring more awareness to the public. Many people don't know about the story, and I believe that it deserves recognition. When I tell people about this story, most are unaware that it even exists, that the Modoc War even happened, and it isn't talked about, nor is it taught in school ever. Another goal that I have with this story is to help tell it in a way that captivates the audience and keeps their attention, because there's a lot of Modoc documentaries out there that are very educational, but I don't think it will necessarily be as engaging with the audience, and unless I help tell the story in a way that's really captivating and captures people's attention span. So working on both educating and making the story engaging and able to tell it and document it in a way that people will remember and absorb it and want to talk about it. And since I don't have a connection to the MODOK war story myself or the MODOK people, I'm able to help tell it in a way where I don't interject my own personal perspective on it. So I guess that's a bonus where I can tell it from like an outsider perspective. And I'm really grateful to be a part of this project, and I'm excited to help out with the process and the creativity behind it.
And if I could jump in really quick on that last bit, there have been a lot of documentaries, movies, and books written about this, and all of them have been either told by someone else outside or under the approval and the authority of someone else. So the nice thing about this is, in my consideration, it's a true story. It's a true story in that we're going to allow people to speak their truth. And I have a bias in many ways because I grew up there, and that's where having Christelle involved is, she has no bias. She just has a pure interest. And that is really going to pull, you know, that's going to pull the true and honest stories from people that they want to share.
Yeah, so with the production process, we have been working on this since last December 2020. And at first, Don just showed me a small video that he had captured of the graves and him narrating over it. And so that was kind of the start of the production, was just that little video where he had this intense emotional narration. And since then, we've gotten some more footage of the graves and of the MODOK land. And a lot of what we've been doing has been more behind the scenes and with the pre-production, just planning and setting up our GoFundMe and writing articles about this and just trying to get it all planned out. And so we've been meeting a few times a month to discuss about the next steps. And yeah, we created a GoFundMe, and I wrote an article about the story where I interviewed Don. And we were also recently in the Eugene Weekly, so that was great for some coverage and to get the story out there more. And we're currently working on writing grants, so that's a lot of the pre-production stuff that we've been doing. And then in terms of actual production, we've been going out and filming at Fort Klamath, where the graves are. We've been going to the lava beds where the actual war happened, and Tule Lake, where the MODOK people lived and hunted and gathered. And we're hoping to go to Medicine Lake soon to film the gathering of a rock. And while we're at those places, we're filming both the place and interviewing Don about his stories, and hopefully we'll get some more MODOK people to talk to about their stories. And then we're also hoping to travel to Oklahoma to meet with the MODOK people there, and that will be a whole another adventure. And then for post-production, consists of like editing all the stuff and posting it on social media, or and even like creating the documentary out of it. So right now I'm in the process of editing a lot of the footage that we've gotten so far and just making small videos about it for like trailers or little teasers to put on Instagram and Facebook and get out there so that there's some kind of footage that people can see, because right now we mostly just have articles and photos. So that's right now the post-production aspect of it. And then in the future, when we have more footage, start compiling it together and really have, hopefully have a team by then so we can start making it a bigger production, a large documentary.
One of the things that we said when we started, when we sat down and we talked about doing this, is we said we wanted to go big because it's a big story And our initial plan seemed very simple in consideration now of we wanted to gather a rock, set it on the land, everybody would hug, laugh, some would cry and would tell stories. Going back to what we said about going big, the story is growing and it's expanding for me more than I could have imagined. It's developing into such an incredible story. And that's why initially I think we were overambitious of, you know, we're going to hurry up and we're just going to get this in the can. But now as the story continues to expand, we realize that it is a lot more production process and pre-production and planning and letting the story blossom. And I was kind of discouraged because when we met last year, I thought, geez, by October, we're going to be hitting the film circuit, where here we are in October, and it is just going to become such a great project, how it's expanding beyond anything I could have imagined. And I know that sounds vague, but the story is growing. You know, our initial plan is the same, but it's growing in how we're going to do it.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.